It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
No fear here on Declare Your Independence. From me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEA beautiful studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com special show for you today. What we're going to do is we're going to have like a little round table here, and it's going to primarily be me and Bill Buepert. Now, William Buepert, you may have seen his stuff on Lou Rockwell. He has his own blog that he does, and he's editor and publisher of Zero, as in Z-E-R-O, gov.com. Zero, G-O-V.com. Zero, as in not even a little bit. None. So we're going to talk about that. Now, you're doing a lot of writing, and you're saying, look, all you minarchists out there, all you libertarians that think you can get control of the ring of power, give me the ring, man. I'll be good with it, or get behind the lever. He's going, no. Now, as chance would have it, a very good friend of mine, Greg T. We'll just go T. his initials are Greg Tivenin. Anyway, he was the anarchist, one of the leading anarchists back in the mid-90s when here in Arizona, we're doing all our libertarian stuff and so on. I remember him running for office in 94. We got him to do it. And the only thing that he said to interview, they go, why are you running? He goes, because they made me. Butthead, man. So what happens is he used to have a garage door repair business here. Lived in Levine on a large part, very similar to where we're living now, a little farm. His wife is from the Philippines. I mean, they skinned their own rabbits. Know what I mean? I mean, they were, lived an agrarian as much as possible style, dealt in gold kind of. I mean, he was way, he's a trailblazer back then. Bought a farm in Missouri, been living there for over a decade, I guess, with his two young children. They're now 15, 17, beautiful girls, his wife Doreen, and they live on a farm, raise all kinds of chickens and ducks and geese and cows. So you want to talk about off-grid living in his straw bale house that he built himself? This is it, okay? So we may refer to him a little bit while it's flooding there now. That's what we've been hearing about that. But primarily, it's going to be William Buepert and I talking about, can there be any government? Any. We have Dr. Paul is threatening to run again, the big bad guys, they don't like that none too much. And they put up Herman Cain, the Federal Reserve guy. He's the winner. Yay! We got our own black guy up there. That's Federal Reserve. Pay no attention to that part. And, Fox News is doing kind of whatever. I mean, I don't know. He's good, bad, whatever. But it didn't surprise me. Fox News is pushing the guy. That's Federal Reserve chair of the Kansas City branch or something. I'm going, seriously? Whatever. And then, of course, Federal Reserve never really came up. So we'll see how that plays out in the future. So we're going to have minds being freed again during the 2012 election cycle. For Dr. Paul, it's a 2012 speaking tour. Can we go past that? Should we go past that? Should we be talking about planting no flag way out into the future and government's not there? Can we do that? Would it be prudent to do that? Should we do that just to open up the envelope and get the minds opened up to the concept of all the stuff that you're talking about you want government to do for you? They can never do it. That's not their role. And William Buport does a good job of making that clear. Let's go ahead and go to William. William, help me out, man. You know, what is it you're advocating?
Well, first of all, call me Bill, Ernie. You know better than that. What I'm advocating is the absence of organized government, of what somebody on my forum referred to as systemized coercion. Because I'm often asked, well, so what is government? Well, government is basically going to be those people who have a monopoly on force in which they can initiate force against the zero aggression principle, which Rothbard put forth, which basically said, if you never initiate aggression, then we can have a peaceful, prosperous, and cooperative society. But of course, you and I both know that government from Mesopotamian times to modern times has been nothing more than a way for a few people without merit, but the monopoly on force, to enrich themselves at other people's expense, much like Bastiat said in The Law, where he said that the state is the great fiction by which one group of people live at the expense of another. And quite literally, what government is today and what government is as we know it in these United States is simply a system by which a number of people with guns threaten your neighbors and threaten you and say, if you don't empty your pockets and do exactly what we wish you to do, we are going to fine you, jail you, maim you, or kill you, or worse.
And you make the argument in your... you make your argument in your writings that there are two types of laws. And you have the ones that, you know, rape, murder, taking, stealing, doing stuff that you would count on the government to protect you from or at least have a say. And I'm sorry, what do they call it?
Malum per se.
And then the other type.
Malum prohibitum.
And the majority is this prohibitum thing, which is, how is it that we got a government that all of a sudden started into the social and economic engineering? It's to serve what purpose?
In the end, the purpose that government serves is it takes those people who are bold enough to take up guns and cudgels and whatever weapons they choose and say, this nation state, which is a nice term for a tax jurisdiction, this is ours. We have the rights to prey and P-R-E-Y. We have the rights to prey upon the populace and take this feedlot and all the cattle that are within it and take from them what we wish. You know, the brilliant thing about the American system and the Western European system is that, unlike the Soviet and Chinese systems, which were really in your face about the coercion, communism, socialism, that kind of thing, at least they were honest about what they sought to do, which was put manacles on you, fetter you, threaten you with all those things I just described, and then life would be better for you. Well, we know that in the end it isn't. What they do with the vote and what they do in democracy is they actually give the cattle a vote within the left and right limits of not being able to tell their rulers what they can take and what they can't take, but they think they have a voice. What they're in essence doing is legitimizing their jailers. That's what voting does. Voting does nothing else. Now, does that mean that voting is something that has no relevance whatsoever? Of course not. Let's suppose you like model trains, or you raise dogs, or some other kind of cooperative hobby, or you shoot guns and you have a vote on how much dues are going to be. Everybody can have a unanimous decision on that because if you want to leave, you leave. Today, with the Internal Revenue Service, for instance, can you leave the system? Good Lord, with North Korea and the United States, that is the only system that pursues everybody planet-wide for their taxes on what they earn, even offshore.
You know, let me tell you, you may not know, well, you probably know this, but Greg doesn't know this. Just yesterday, or the day before, there has been, and they keep talking about it, they want Southern Arizona to split off as the 51st state.
Pima.
And I'm going, cool, you know, fine, you can split off. Hell, we can have 400 states for all I care. The more the better. But, you know, is that the argument we should be having? And when we come back, you know, that's a good, you know, start-off point, is that we want to lessen it. We want to get down to smaller jurisdictions. We want to, okay, you know, but can I leave? Well, can the southern part of Arizona leave? Well, and if they leave, are they still part of the federal government? Because they want to be more liberal. They want to be even more. We don't like that Northern Arizona, you know, dominated by Phoenix. They're too conservative. Wow.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
To me, Ernest Hancock, my good friends, William Buford and Greg Tivnan. You know, I want to make sure that the people that we're talking to are the generation next. You know, a lot of the other guys, you know, Greg kind of was the trailblazer for me back in the day. You know, he was, you know, I got to tell you, I mean, I don't know. We'll do the children thing. No. Okay, I will, because I already said it. I remember in the mid-90s, it was, you know, it's for the children. It's always for the children. The children, the children. I mean, he goes, what if we just killed all the children? Then what would be the argument then? Heck, in China, they just take them out, throw them in the canal, you know, first year or two. It's kind of, you know, whatever. The children, the children. Is it the children that's the enemy? Are we got to get the children now? Oh, be gone with the children. He's like, you know, chitty, chitty, bang, bang guy going, where are the children? Where are the children? Now, of course, he didn't mean that, you know. But the point was, is that's it. The entire planet is enslaved from these little guys. No, it wasn't really the children. That was the excuse. Just like it's always Osama or Islamofascism or global warming or whatever. There's always a reason. Well, what happens when, you know, in the name of the children, you're taking away their future? When that becomes obvious, all of a sudden you got to come up with a new reason. You know, who's going to be the new bad guy that Osama's got? It's always three. You know, there's I'm in a shed. You know, I'm in a jihad, whatever. You know, that's how I remember it. So you have I'm in a jihad from Iran. You have Saddam, and you got Osama. Well, Saddam's gone, and Osama's gone. And who we got? Oh, we got to get Kim Jong-il in there. Well, you haven't heard of him anymore. So then you got, it's always three. Well, who are there three now? Well, if they don't have them, they're going to have them. So what do they bring up? Oh, yeah, this is a good one. Today, they finally, one of the first billionaire bankers for insider trading that they get is this guy named Raj Rajaratnam or whatever. Oh, he looks foreigner, doesn't he? Yeah, he's dark-skinned from Sri Lanka, whatever. Is he Muslim? Well, I don't know, but they're going to ask anyway. And the thing is that, you know, he just sat there and took his medicine. Is he going to serve time? How much time is he going to do? They got a conviction. What's the deal that's really made behind the scenes? How many millions is he put? He's got $70 million on account, kind of, you know, sitting over there on the side, and they're going to have extradition. And since they've had extradition with Sri Lanka, nobody's done it in, I don't know, many years. So I'm going, where are we at on this? It's all show. And that's what William Buford has been demonstrating in his articles. All of this is just for show. What's the reality of how government, how the promise that we made, the social contract that I never signed, okay? What's the promise and what's the reality? What's been the promise? You know, help me out with that one, William. Bill, sorry. You know, tell me, what's the promise been?
Here's government's promise to everybody, every time, whether it's 1917 in Mexico and Russia, where we had the communist revolutions, or the socialist revolutions that have washed over the 20th century and left us 265 million corpses deep out of warfare is, we're going to guarantee that your security, whether it be food, whether it be water, sewage, a proper financial system, whatever the case may be, we're going to ensure that is given to you. But we have an exchange here. We have a deal with the devil, as it were. In exchange for the provision of that security, you must surrender significant amounts of your freedom and liberty. Because if you have freedom and liberty, you may find ways to either do this more effectively than we do, and of course, loose your shackles and loose your fetters that we're trying to place around you. But we're doing this for your own good. It all comes down to, as Greg has said, it's for the children, it's for your own good, whatever the case may be. It's always that guarantee and that promise. And it brings us to some definitional standards too, which I think are very important. You used the word liberal earlier. I disagree with that. I use the word collectivist, because you'll find that from neoconservatives on the supposed right to the left, where you have communists and socialists and everything in between, to include national socialists, they're all collectivists. We in this room are individualist. Those collectivists, for the most part, are de facto interventionist. We in this room, I suppose, would be non-interventionist. I think using those four terms and interchanging them gives you a much more practical way to envision how people behave, whether, because left and right means nothing. It's like when people come to me today, and you know I'm a constitutional skeptic, of course, Ernie, is people say, that's unconstitutional. I say, you know what? That word has no descriptive value whatsoever. Explain that. It's the same thing as limited government. What the heck is that?
It's like a
unicorn.
I'm wondering how it is that you made the transition, because I mean you're a retired Army officer. You know the how do we put it? My glasses here. A quiet professional.
That would be me.
Okay, so the quiet professional type. You know the very professional type. Okay, so. Here you have this, I don't know, what's the other word, training, indoctrination, or whatever it was, into that mindset. How do you go from that to this very entity that I was the tip of the spear for? I'm good. I'm done with that. You know why?
Well, I think for the same reason where Smedley Butler talked about war as a racket, and this was the 1930s, and I think that you'll find warriors throughout the ages that a number of them have come to the conclusion that not only is war hell, but war, for the most part, is unnecessary. And what I discovered going to various, I know I can't cuss on here, so I won't, going to various pits of crap around the world. We had another term that we use for it on our neo-imperialist missions around the globe. You get to see some things that you would never want to see again. You get to experience some things that you don't want to see replicated in your own homeland. My wife hates this phrase, but I like this phrase where she says, just because you're a doctor doesn't mean you believe in disease as a positive vector. The way I see this is that just because one knows war and knows the practice of war doesn't make you a war lover necessarily. I would submit to you that with all the civil administrations that we've had in these United States from the beginning of the country to this one, the most dovish advice always came from the uniforms when the president would turn to his left or right to say, so what do you think we should do here?
Not fight.
Not fight, because we know that the price in the end is not only the blood and treasure that we personally expend as warriors, but in the end, what good does it do?
Make somebody money.
It does.
There's a motivation for it from somewhere. I mean, who do you think it is? This thing, I want to get your opinion on this, what's going on with China. We're battling China economically in Africa for resources or whatever.
And South America.
And I'm going, who benefits from this new resurrection of the Cold War? That, you know, I'm sure Cheney wanted it. Heck, he's sending memos to Obama, you know? Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, this is what they want. And I'm going, who benefits from this? It's like, I mean, seriously, you just look to the central banking and you say, well, all the guys that get the debt and they get the interest on it, they don't care who wins or fights. Or they just want to make sure they're spending the money. Spend the money. You know, is that all it really is? Is government just an excuse to spend the money? Whose money? Is there any left? Are they still going to be able to do it in the future? More things to talk about when we come back, because we have to survive this collapse. Just breathe in and out. We'll be right back.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
Yeah, and they were telling Mr. Bill Buford the exact same thing. You know, they were saying, hey, man, we need you to do what we tell you because we can, and you listen to what we tell you, take orders. Well, there was a time that he finally went to the point and he's just, no. So we're talking about that transition, but you know, one of the things that we were talking about during the break is you were saying the cost involved. I mean, just simple things. Go ahead and give some of those numbers again.
Well, the cost of our neo-imperialist enterprise right now is just absolutely enormous. It costs probably between $75 and $110 per gallon of diesel that goes into all of our vehicles that are overseas, whether in Iraq or Afghanistan. More expensive in Afghanistan because of the lines of communications and the trafficability difficulties. In order to field one contractor who's making, let's say, between $150,000 and $250,000 a year as a salary, with the normal wrap rates that are in the industry, which is how much it costs industry or a corporation to hire a guy for the government to do that, is probably 2 to 3 times what that amount would be, somewhere around there, which means that if you're fielding a guy in Afghanistan who's a contractor, one of those guys who's all kitted out with all the best luxury tactical items money can buy.
Yeah, in black.
In black. Or coyote. That's a popular color over there now. He's costing us between $600,000 and $700,000.
Per what?
Per man.
For a year or just
for
to get
a year,
there?
Oh, for a year.
For a year. Okay.
For a year. You know, to get there, that's going to be bloody expensive. You know, you look at the number of military bases we have around the world. You look at the size of Bagram, for instance, which just boggles the mind in Afghanistan. You look at these bases we've established in Iraq. We're in like 110 countries doing everything from having a dozen guys there to having 55,000 people there. The cost of this imperialist enterprise is enormous, and we're not even doing it in the way that Britain did, where they tried to find a way to make it profitable, where they tried to find a way to draw monies from, let's say, the Raj in India or a number of their colonies, and make it pay off in some fashion.
Okay, I got to share, you know, with the audience this part. Hans Hermann Hoppe, you remember, you know who he is? He's an economics guy at Las Vegas University. And he was a speaker at the Freedom Summit, and it was encouraged that he come and talk to us, and I could see why. He made the argument, he goes, you know, monarchies are better. Because at least, you know, there's only one guy you got to take out. And the other thing was, is that when they go into these wars, it's for profit. Now, as a whole, for the kingdom kind of thing, when you use a democracy, an empire like that to go to war, all they're trying to fund is Goldman Sachs and the military-industrial complex or something. It's not like, you know, screw the kingdom or the people or whatever. They're specific individuals or corporations that make money from this. That's where the money is. So when you had the British Empire, what made me think of that is the argument that he was making. When you had the British Empire going in, well, of course they're wanting to make money for the empire. You know, everybody benefits a little island back in Great Britain. What we're doing now, their little island is some corporate account somewhere. It's not even the same. Of course, it's all bad anyway. You know, that this whole empire thing doesn't work. Sure as heck sucks for the people there. But we're in a situation now, if you've had guests on all this last week, that where I've had people the last couple of weeks that are in Bahrain, in Saudi Arabia, in Iraq, in Egypt, in Afghanistan. My phone bill is damn, okay? And these people are going, they're talking about, yesterday I think it was, I had a guy on, he's talking about, well, we want to make sure we get a timetable for withdrawal from Afghanistan. I go, you got a timetable for end of this year for Iraq. Do you really think they're going to abandon all these bases? Heck no. In Afghanistan, you don't even have a homogenized, consolidated even country. There are a bunch of tribes that are like, you're not going to get a national soccer team out of us. There's no, what are you talking about? This is map lines drawn by some English and French guys in World War I or something. So do you think that there's ever going to be an abandonment of these military bases? And if we leave, somebody's going to take them over.
I absolutely think there's going to be an abandonment of them. I don't even know if we'll have the money to bring the troops home and pay their airfare. Because the economic collapse that we have coming to us is not a matter of if, but when. It is absolutely impossible historically to sustain ourselves economically with both our monetary system, our deficit, our debt, and all the other sundry things that we're doing through regulation and taxation in this country. You know, what we're trying to do is we're trying to take the golden goose and make it continue to lay these eggs, but we're strangling that goose, we're raping the goose, we're setting it on fire. We're limiting that. We're doing everything we possibly can to take the engines of entrepreneurship and small business and strangle them in their cradles. So I think to a large extent, it's not going to be something that the government, the U.S. government wants, but our currency is going to collapse. Once that happens, sure, we're going to abandon all those bases, and they're going to go to whoever is running that country at the time. It's interesting you mentioned Afghanistan. Afghanistan is one of those countries, and I have to admit admiring this for to a certain extent. It will never have a president. It can only have a mayor.
Okay, define that.
What that means is that outside of Kabul, much like the pre-15th century Martin van Creveld nation states, he can't control squat. Whoever is there, whether it's the former Philadelphia restaurateur, who we currently installed there as our puppet, or whoever succeeds him, outside of Kabul, they can't control squat in the four corners of that nation.
You know, that was another thing. I was talking to NGO, non-governmental whatever.
Isn't that you and I?
Organization. Well, these people, they got, you know, special pinky, you know, pink slip, permission slip or whatever the heck it is. And she was talking about the highway that they have there. And all it does is link the military bases. You know, it's like their Autobahn from base to base or something. So what they do is they have this one stretch of highway that goes for hundreds of miles, and it costs a gazillion trillion dollars, and they have to keep paying off the warlords. And it reminded me of Lawrence of Arabia. All you had to do is keep, you know, blowing up the railways of the Ottoman Empire and keep them engaged and, you know, chasing them around and them blowing up their rail lines and everything. And they never could join the trenches of their allies, the Germans, in World War One. So that was kind of the whole point, was to keep them there. Because once they got out of Arabia, they weren't going to go back. Or couldn't. So now we're in Afghanistan. You know, if the warlords ever get the U.S. out, and, you know, from trying to keep finishing this road or whatever, they're never going to get back. But in the meantime, they're making bank. Keep paying us off, and we'll keep kind of sort of letting you finish a little bit here and cost and give us some money. So this whole thing is just to make somebody some money. And even if they keep the bases there, it's for, I don't know, exploitation of resources or oil pipelines or rare earth elements or something. I mean, they keep coming up with all these flags of, you know, we have to support the empire. It's like we're the Romans or something. It's like it's a good, they have to convince the American people that our lifestyle depends on us ruling these tribes there. And I'm like, you know, it's always going to be there. It's a lot cheaper if you just go buy it.
To include the opium.
Whatever, I don't care. You know, heck, they need it illegal so that they can keep reaping the profit. Who do you think's making all the money? You know, this little black bag CIA crap all over again. So I'm just, you know, this reminds me of Bo Greitz in the early 90s. He goes, let me tell you how it really works, man. And Afghanistan was included in a lot of that stuff. So I'm going, you know, okay, Golden Triangle. Hell, Sheriff Arpaio, Mr. DEA, was in Turkey. These guys all, it's the same names. It's the same people. When we come back, I really want to focus on what we're going to do next, because I think we can agree that it's going to go. I mean, there's no, just the math doesn't work. There's no way we're going to be able to perpetuate this. One way is they're going to just say, you know what? We need to do away with, you're right, it's all bad. We're going to have the world, though. We're going to go to that. And they'll drag it out a little bit longer and so on. But the lifestyle, if we cling to the idea of government, our individual lifestyle, our children, our grandchildren, it's going to keep plummeting down. If we can break our minds free, there's another option. But we're going to talk about that when we come back with William Buford here on Declare Your Independence in just a little bit.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Music, man. They're going, yeah, I remember that. High school. You know, I want to get right to, you know, yeah, we're all of the opinion that this is going to go down. It's going to go down relatively quickly. When it happens, I mean, you hear me a lot of times say, it won't happen all at once, but it will happen overnight. A lot of people don't, you know, what the heck does that mean? I'm going, you see all the signs, all the preparation, all the stuff, it's all out there. But then sooner or later, all of a sudden, you wake up in the morning and silver's $50. It almost happened. It went down, going back up and down and up, blah, 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 blah. The only thing you need to know is Is the government going to stop spending? Heck no. So what do you think is going to happen? Well, it's, you know, silver went down. That just means buy more silver, you know? So now we're looking at a situation where Greg has, you know, eclipsed all of us. I mean, he's been on Lone Prairie for over a decade and, you know, able to survive. You know, power goes out for 5 days. He's like, yeah, you know, whatever. You know, that's why you got candles, right? So this is, you live a different kind of life. You're more in tune with, you know, nature. I mean, you're, you know what? It's raining today. Guess what? I'm not working whatever the heck I was planning to do. I'll do something else. So this is, you know, a totally different lifestyle that we've got to live vicariously through him. Yes, it can be done. I've gone to visit his farm a couple times. I mean, we get it. All right. My kids have gone through, you know, on their way driving around after high school and stopped by Greg's. Say, you know, what's up? So I'm glad that they got to experience that. Now, I want to talk to someone that's been in the machine, at the tip of the spear of the machine, that sees what's happened in other countries on the ground as they were going through the same thing, a collapse of government and what it's like and what they got to prepare for. So on his blog, zerogov.com, William Bupert is preparing himself and sharing with others to help them prepare. What are we preparing for, and how should we prepare, and what are the skills we need, and what are you advocating?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I was honored to be a speaker at your Freedom Summit in December, and one of the audience members said, what's the most valuable thing that I need? What do I need to be ready? Because we've heard G3, guns, gold, and groceries. That's the thing you need to prepare. My answer was critical thinking skills. You have got to have critical thinking skills. You can have the finest arsenal in the world. You can have all the food you can dare put up. You can have piles and mountains of gold and silver. But if you can't think your way out of a paper sack and you're still in this matrix that we're all exposed to day and night with this media blitz, whether it's television, radio, newspapers, and the rest of the government media complex, everything seems to be a bowl of cherries. And the government is always there to help out and assist in these crises that they themselves create of their own volition all the time. So my answer to that is critical thinking. They do not help that well.
You know, we covered Katrina very closely because Charles Goyette, I was his producer at the time, and we were over at the Air America affiliate here in Phoenix. Very popular. 3-hour morning show. We're kicking butt. We're their token libertarians on the entire freaking network across the country. And, you know, we're doing well. What happened when Katrina came in, we were looking at different things. Of course, they're screaming for the government to do more, and you should, and you're not fast enough. And you know there's just not enough resources to be, you know, an entire – that's the whole point that we're making.
And they'll screw it up.
But there were 600 bass boats of people from the entire region that knew what needed to be done. I have bass boat. I go New Orleans. I get people off roof. I take them dry land. This is not complicated. Well, there's a FEMA guy there with an M16, so saying none shall pass. And they're going,
yes.
And you're here to help, you sorry, So I'm going, what do you think is going to happen? Oh, if the president just go, hey, please go help your neighbors, boom, problem solved. You know, and he can go golfing for all I care.
But that happened in the county in California when they had the wildfires that were raging. It happened when there was a flooding of Nashville just 3 or 4 months ago. Where you didn't have the massive government complex saying, no, we've got to get in there to save people through that glorious phrase, spontaneous order, which is a very good emblem of how the free market works, because no one can have perfect information. No one can.
You know, we're going through the situation right now. In Missouri, you know, it is flooding. The Mississippi be a flooding. And that's right where you're at, Greg. Tell me, you know, how are people coping without the government saving them?
We just use bigger tires on our trucks and wait till the creek goes down. That's all we do.
So, I mean, we're talking major flooding, right? Even on your farm?
The water was only about 4 feet deep across my driveway for about 4 days. So for a couple of days, we just left the car on the other side of the creek and had a rope between two trees and went across that way if we really had to, or we just waited.
You're not allowed to just wait, man. No. You need a program.
Well, our program is to just wait.
Well, you know, I want to ask you, you know, from someone that's experienced in living on a farm, and you're kind of isolated. I mean, you have electrical power that goes there that works most of the time. You know, you have a telephone that works most of the time.
Except when you were trying to call me to come over to visit.
You know, right. You know, when we came over, hey, help us. We had to find some farm that was miles away that, oh, yeah, we know the Tivnans. And they, you know, took us over there or pointed the way. You know, I'm wondering, is it a different, are you deprived of a lifestyle? I mean, do you really have to give up your sovereignty as an individual to a government so that, you know, 5, 10, 20, even 30 days out of the year that you're not inconvenienced? I mean, is that what you're giving up?
Well, actually, during the flood, I found it very convenient. I wasn't annoyed by anybody. We actually kind of enjoyed it. We did lose power when big winds come through and took down the whole forest around us. And in that case, all the neighbors went out with their own chainsaws, cut all the trees off along the side of the highway, and had the roads open in a couple of days. That was 2 years ago, and there's still forests that haven't been cleared. But when the neighbors got out with the chainsaws, the roads were opened. That's how it works out where I live. There's only 5 county employees in the whole county where I live, unless you count the sheriff and his family, I mean deputies. And they leave the jail door open like an Andy Griffith half the time. So it's a great place to live if you can wait when you need to wait.
Well, that means you'd have to stock up a little bit and prepare, maybe have to slaughter a chicken.
Yeah, we can do that. And when FEMA came in and started passing out meals ready to eat, they still have them piled up by the fire station because no one really wanted them and no one really needed them because people are usually smart enough to start a fire and cook. But if you're from FEMA, apparently people aren't.
That's part of your tax return, though, those MREs. Greg, I want to ask you a question real quick, something that's always intrigued me. I'm a ruralite, just like you appear to be, mm-hmm. where I've lived in the country most of my life, and I really enjoy that. I think that there are demarcation lines culturally in the United States. Some people say left and right, Republican and Democrat. I think that the difference between rural folks and urban folks is huge. And I've even posited that the whole socialist, collectivist, communist phenomenon worldwide in the Western, well, at least the Western world, is a phenomenon that grows in cities. Cities are the hotbeds of socialism, collectivism, that kind of thing. Do you see that yourself from your perspective, where there's a distinct difference between city folk? Because I get the impression that when I visit some of my friends in the big cities, that they'll open their refrigerator is practically empty. They got condiments. Well, why is that? It's because they pride themselves on their lack of self-sufficiency as city folks, because of the web they live in. Ruralites are just the opposite. Greg?
Yes, there's a very large difference. When someone moves in, we always call them city people. They called me city people, but then I was more self-sufficient than any of them ever were in their entire lives. So I was accepted kind of differently. But yeah, people move in from California and they start a petition to have 4 miles of dirt road paved so that they don't have to drive their Cadillac on a gravel road that's got 3 houses on it in 4 miles. And they can't understand, or they get upset because it's not a county picking up their garbage. And I say, well, why don't you just stop buying bottled water in these little tiny bottles and get it in a 5-gallon container you can refill, and then you'll have a lot less garbage. Well, they don't think that way, but that's how most of where I live works.
You know, it's so interesting Greg says that about the roads, because one of the things that people often say to me is, but who's going to build our roads? Who will provision our food? Who will check it? If government's
going,
not there?
Where aren't any roads?
but get this, in a state like Kansas, 60% of all the roads are private. Private. My road's private. I had a quarter-mile-long driveway when I was in North Idaho. Private. I maintained it myself. Guess what? It didn't go into ruin because I needed it.
You know, we need to continue to talk about this stuff because this is where we're going. You know, whether you like it or not, you know, this is where America is going. Is it a bad place? Well, the government's going to try and convince you that it is. But what happens when America gets self-sufficient again? Got it. Chick, 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 chick. Yes! You need to get some and a garden. Oh yeah, hell yeah, and we're growing tobacco, because I'm rolling my own cigars, because I can. Well, we'll make sure we'll put that bad boy out here, you know, when we get the first ones, but it might take a little while. You guys stay right there, there's going to be more great conversation when we come back here on Declare Your Independence. Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what readers of freedomsphoenix.com get every day. Readers of freedomsphoenix.com are constantly provided the information that detail the real news between the lines of propaganda about government policies and the true relationship we all have with coercive governments. Learn the true condition of our economy, innovations and technological breakthroughs in energy, health, computer science, and space travel. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media, the media that is so last century. Corporate media has evolved into nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but we now have a fantastic alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com provides constant news updates on the issues that affect our lives in the most important ways. Our liberty and our property are under constant attack, and FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda while encouraging the participation of our readers. Join us at FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com, where the revolution between the ears has already matured. Tour.